So here we are again, another week, SmackDown review for the show that aired on the 10th of April. I hope everyone's enjoying lockdown as much as you could. I would sort of ask what you're doing, but I probably can guess, same as everyone else, sitting at home, going for one walk or one run a day just to get out of the house. You might be doing some baking or some odd jobs that the wife's been nagging you about for months on end. Or you might just be enjoying some time together, some time to relax. But whatever it is, stay safe and we'll get through it all together. But as I've said before, one thing is a constant, WWE airs each week. And as long as that's coming each week, then I'm going to be coming each week as well with a SmackDown review. So let's get to it. SmackDown started off with Braun Strowman in the ring. Braun Strowman obviously won the WWE Universal title at WrestleMania. So he hits a promo. It was actually quite a good promo. I don't particularly rate him too much on the mic, but this it did show how much he's improved in recent months or weeks, I suppose. But what I liked about this promo was the fact he praised Goldberg, but not in a bad way. Now, you might wonder what I'm saying. How can you praise someone in a bad way? But he, by praising him too much, it sort of takes away from his win. But he was building his accomplishment about Mania being his best and biggest win, but by also giving Goldberg a tiny bit of praise, a tiny bit of compliment, and so it makes his win seem better rather than lower than what it is. Then Shinsuke interrupts, which cut this little promo a little bit too short for me, because I was actually quite enjoying it. I was enjoying seeing Braun actually just stand there on his own, nothing else, just speaking about his win, about how he's so proud of himself, sort of like how it was the best moment of his career type thing. And when Shinsuke came out, it just turned into an awful, awful segment. Shinsuke just feels like he's taken something backstage, and as he comes out to the ring, it all suddenly hits him, and it just looks like a bit of a mess. I mean, his English accent is just like plain right bad. I just can't really understand him. The bits I can understand, they're just too slow because it's him trying to pronounce the words properly. So he has to obviously do it really slow because he's obviously been told what to say rather than I actually believe what he's saying he understands. So he's almost been told, oh, say this, say it like this. So he just goes out and repeats it. And I'm not really sure he understands it all. It's not like having a conversation. It's like reading it off a bit of paper like we would do the other way around if we're reading some other foreign language and we're just making the noises and then hoping it sounds right. So Cesaro enters the ring out of nowhere and Braun gets rid of him quickly. And this leads to a cheap shot from Shinsuke. And they basically announce that later in the show, Braun and Shinsuke will face off in a match. Now, for me, as I've said in the promo on the mic, Braun looked good. He looked comfortable. Sami Zayn would have been better for me with the history of them two as well for the Intercontinental Championship when that was a thing. I think Sami could have played on that. I would have preferred Sami to interrupt, but obviously Sami was on the show. If they wanted to go that route, you either had Shinsuke terrible on the mic, Cesaro terrible on the mic. So they'd done the best with what they could have. I just didn't like it. But that's my personal opinion on them superstars. So next up, we had our first match of the night. We had Bliss and Cross come out. Now, the entrance for me, I just think it would be a little bit better with Nikki trying to copy Bliss on how to be sexy rather than being all over excited and silly. If you know what I mean, she comes out and starts like jumping about a little bit too much and like holding her title and rattling it and everything like that. I think that obviously Alexa Bliss is a sexy character. She looks good. She struts. I think if Nikki was almost copying that, because then the whole excited and the enthusiasm is toned down a little bit, because if they're both like it, then yeah, that's fine. But as we've seen many times with a perfect example, the Hype Bros or Mojo Rawley or Gronk or whoever, a little bit of too overexcitement, too much enthusiasm can sort of get annoying. That's what I prefer, because she is actually a very good looking girl when she is dressed up as well, Nikki Cross, as we've seen on the Moment of Bliss. Obviously with her previous history in Sanity, that wasn't the case. She wasn't trying to be a sexy character. She wasn't trying to be sort of that diva, the typical diva that we'd see in WWE in the past. So hopefully that changes. And of course, I understand the enthusiasm, the excitement, because they've just regained the titles. So I sort of let her off for this week. I just hope it doesn't continue too much. The Kabuki Warriors, for me, had a much, much better entrance without all that stupid screaming. And it was quite a strong looking mystic entrance in their entrance gear with all the Japanese like sort of like umbrellas and the outfits. And it just looked good. It looked mysterious. They were coming out. They weren't screaming. It was just a slow sort of walk to the ring. Now, annoyingly, why is Asuka on both SmackDown and Raw? I don't know. They tried this with Roman Reigns. It backfired massively when they used to do that. So I don't really know where they're going with this. But anyway, we'll move on. Obviously, the Kabuki Warriors, she's part of that. So the match started quite strongly. And the Kabuki Warriors did a very, very good job at isolating Bliss from Nikki, because they kept attacking her, causing her to be injured outside the ring. And the double team got the upper hand over Bliss. Both female stars worked very, very well together in this match. I think Kairi Sane looked a lot more confident in what she was doing. However, some of the punches were a little bit off. I mean, they were actually to Alexa's shoulder instead of her face. But anyway, that was just me picking up things, because obviously I look at it in a different light, because I'm sort of reviewing it, I'm analysing it a little bit more than just watching it freely as such. So then all of a sudden, Asuka returns to that annoying character, and she goes outside the ring, she gets on the commentary table, she gets a commentary mic, and then she just starts shouting these random noises like down the microphone. I don't know why they let her do it. It is beyond me. I mean, I'd just stop all of it. Like, they used to do it in their entrance, and as I've said, it works so much better without it. They used to do it in ring. They seem to have stopped that. And then all of a sudden, she starts up again. I don't understand why. I find it very, very irritating. No one can understand her. She does it all in Japanese. Her English accent is the same as Shinsuke's. It's not very good. So for me, I would just stop it. So at this point, Nikki gets back involved in the match by attacking Asuka, which thankfully shuts her up. The Kabuki Warriors did a very, very good job of isolating Nikki from Bliss in a reverse of what we saw earlier. So basically, they were using the numbers game on one superstar, and then the other one was injured pretty much outside the ring. So it actually looked at one point like they were going to win, when Asuka Lock was locked in on Nikki after they paid homage to the Legion of Doom with their partnership move from the top rope. It was a little bit random for me, but somehow Nikki and Bliss got back on top, and Alexa hits a brilliant, brilliant twisted Bliss on both opponents from the top rope to the outside. Then Nikki is in ring, she's with Kairi Sane. Nikki hits her twisting neck breaker to get the pin over Sane. The snap net breaker works very, very well for Nikki, as she's not the tallest. So I just hope she gets some sort of build-up move to it, like Cena's five-knuckle shuffle that would lead to his AA, or even Shawn Michaels' like stomps before his switching music. Like I just feel like a little flurry or strikes or a move or some sort of like little build-up to the neck breaker would make it seem more effective. It'd make it seem bigger, because it's a very, very quick move. It's not a particularly extravagant move, because obviously the bodies are quite close together, and Nikki's not obviously the tallest. For me, this match, I thought the Kabuki Warriors overall played the heel role very, very well, in terms of how they sort of like cockily smirked at the ref when they get told to stop pulling the hair or get told to get off the ropes. But I just feel like without the ability to speak on the mic, we can't really feel the personality aspect, and I can't get fully invested the same way we do in some other heels. Now, even with a manager, it helps the scene with Andrade, like Lesnar, etc. I know they tried it with Paige, but I think for me, she was too popular as a face to be a heel manager for me. She was obviously too over with the crowd, that being a heel manager for the Kabuki Warriors, you're already too popular. Now, I know Paul Heyman's popular, but he's popular with heat. So he's a popular heel, where Paige has been like a popular babyface, an absolutely huge babyface, and then suddenly go into like a heel type role as a manager. It just didn't really work. I'm just hoping this sort of feud with Nikki and Bliss and the Kabuki Warriors is over for now. We've seen it at Mania, and now we've seen it after Mania. Whether Asuka then returns to Raw permanently or not, I don't know, but a new opponent is definitely needed for the Tag Team Champions. Hopefully in the form of a return from the Iconics, which has been teased for a while now. I don't know if that's just because they've been gone for a while, and it seems like the natural thing, with a few superstars returning recently. So I hope they return. I'm sure they might return after this whole situation with COVID-19 is over. I can't see him returning before then, and it wouldn't really make sense to, just because it's going to be very, very difficult for them to return, because obviously live TV. I would also like Asuka just to stick to one brand. If she's going to stick as a tag team, then stick with Kabuki Warriors. And if they're going to take her solo, then move her to Raw, or just have her fight solo on SmackDown. And Kairi Sane can also have a solo run. I don't need the whole cross brand thing. For me, just leave it there. The next thing on SmackDown was Elias. He was on the platform again, ready to perform his new song. Pretty much it was describing his victory at Mania, which was actually quite a good little catchy song. I actually found it alright. I found it was a little bit irrelevant, but after I got over that, I actually thought it was a good little song. I was actually hoping for Corbin to get involved somehow, even for a tiny bit. I'm not asking for confrontation, I'm not asking for some big throw off the platform again or some brawl, just some little interruption, because I would have loved that. I would also love the feud to continue, as I said in my Mania review. This is a feud that worked, the match was brilliant, so I'm hoping they do continue it. But for this little segment, it worked. It was a little bit of a gap filler. The song was good enough for what it was. So next up, we saw the continue of the Mandy and Otis sort of love story, or Dolph or Sonya. I don't know what to really call it, but you know what storyline I mean. This was actually advertised as such, as a Mandy and Otis love story, like up next, but it didn't actually feature either of them. But anyway, so Dolph and Sonya came out. I actually think this is going to elevate Sonya much more than it will for Mandy. If the feud ends and Sonya continues working with Dolph, it will definitely benefit Sonya more through how good Dolph works with women in storylines. So they come out to the ring. Tucker interrupts with, again, what felt a very strong, confident mic work. I actually feel like the mic work on tonight's SmackDown was actually very, very strong. So there was barely any pauses in his words, and it seemed natural, it seemed unscripted. Whether it was or not, he just performed it very, very well. And instead of what happened last time in the match when these two faced off, Tucker was actually built as a powerhouse this time, which obviously he is a powerhouse. And he more than controlled and he dominated the beginning of the match, treating Dolph basically like a ragdoll. It was an excellent aggressive performance from Tucker from start to finish. And with a dance partner with the experience of Dolph Ziggler to sell it all perfectly, it was a great, great mix. I mean, the whole match Tucker was on top. Then Dolph basically gets the win from one super kick, which was a shame. I always thought Ziggler would win, but I thought at least have a Sonya interference like we saw at Mania. It would have at least continued to build Tucker strong. Two things I took away from this was the positive move for Sonya, and although she seems a little bit nervous in the role at the moment, she looks good with him. And once again, like, if she gains more confidence in being in that role, she will thrive and it will elevate her career, because if she stays with Dolph even after the Heavy Machinery storyline is done, it's only good things for her. So another thing is how comfortable both Heavy Machinery members are in the ring as single competitors, which means it adds a lot more flexibility to their tag team, as long as they continue to stay as Heavy Machinery. Now, what I mean by this is, as we've seen in the past, for example, the Hardy Boys, they have and always will be a tag team by nature. However, both were able to have their own singles matches even when they're in Team Extreme, with or without the other member ringside, and then revert back to the tag team when needed. So we've seen the same in, let's say, DX, like the Brothers of Destruction, and so on. There's many tag teams that do this. Of course, they're nowhere near that stature yet. I'm not even comparing them to them sort of tag teams that I've just mentioned. But what I mean is that them stars, they move freely between tag team matches and singles matches without any real introduction. So it all makes sense. if they kept the Heavy Machinery theme, they can continue as tag teams, singles matches, and really build these two characters to be a success for the future once the current tag team storylines go stale. So let's say this Dolph Ziggler feud ends, they go back to tag team, they win the titles maybe, after that they might lose them, and then they have another way to go with singles matches, but also staying with the Heavy Machinery theme, also being these brothers, like best friends type thing. I also think from the destructiveness and aggressiveness we've seen from both powerhouses, so both Otis and both Tucker, so Tucker in this match, and when we saw Otis flip against Miz and Morrison previously, before Mania, I think a heel turn is a definite viable option in the future, which I think would be a huge, huge benefit. I mean, Heavy Machinery going heel together in the future would be incredible. And even doing a New Day type thing where they swap between heel and face at the start. Obviously now, the New Day are just that big and popular. They don't need to change that side of things anymore. But I definitely think big things to come. I hope for all the superstars involved in this current storyline. So that's Dolph Ziggler, Sonya, Mandy and Heavy Machinery. I think the likelihood, if booked correctly, Heavy Machinery and Sonya will benefit the most out of this. But who knows, because I don't always get my way in the storylines. I'm sure you don't too. So the Dirt Sheet returns, presented by The Miz and Morrison. They talk about them retaining at WrestleMania and all the big events like Undertaker returning and Otis kissing Mandy. I actually thought, apart from the cheesy side of things, with the good news sort of little tagline they used, it was actually a nice little recap from both superstars on the mic, which I usually don't think from Morrison, but it was a nice little recap just of how good Mania was, like the Boneyard match, some of the other events that we obviously saw at Mania. It was just quite nice to actually sort of like reference them before you go on to the current stuff that they were going to say. So again, like the first segment that we saw with Braun Strowman, and then it got ruined by Shinsuke, this segment started off really well for me, and then it all went tits up. They performed their new hit single, as they say, which is just dreadful, absolutely awful. I was praying someone would interrupt. And it took until the chorus for the Usos to save me from turning the telly off, because I was literally just about to turn it off. I just think it's absolutely awful what they try and do with some of these little rap things. When the Usos came out, I actually thought for some reason that the Usos were going to come out and do some sort of rap battle with them. But obviously that didn't happen, because the Usos have done a rap battle with the New Day before. So the Usos come out and sort of like stop them. The New Day then come out with Kofi announcing that next week it will be the opposite of the WrestleMania match that we saw, the Triple Threat Ladder match, with the other members from each tag team in The Miz, Jey Uso and Big E, fighting for the titles. Now, I'm not clear, and they weren't very clear on this, that it will be a ladder match. I think it is just a triple threat, because even after the show, when they announced the matches, it just said a triple threat. So I might have to check with that, and then obviously we'll see next week anyway. But I'm very, very excited for this match, and I think it will be another superb performance from all men. It was a very, very clever way to continue this sort of storyline, because we've already had three members fight off against each other. So that was WrestleMania. Now we've had this week where all they've done is talk to each other, but it's felt relevant. So then next week we're going to have a triple threat of the other three involved. So whoever's going to win, I imagine it's going to be a retain again. And then the following week we could have them just talking to each other again, but making it feel relevant. Even a brawl breaks up or something like that, a contract signing type-esque. And then it will lead to a full triple threat, which was basically what was meant to happen at WrestleMania, before obviously this whole situation where The Miz was ill and other things are happening around the world. So it's just a very clever booking from WWE in a very smart way of lengthening this storyline without the need of adding anything. All you're basically doing is building the sort of like road. And I would say road to WrestleMania, but obviously WrestleMania's been. But that sort of road up to the original match, which is very clever, because obviously if we had that match, if we had that triple threat match, and then all of them fighting again after WrestleMania, it would feel like how come the storyline isn't changing? How come the feud isn't changing? Because we've just seen that. A little bit what I thought about Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss versus Kabuki Warriors again. Now, I don't mind seeing that once, because obviously it's SmackDown after Mania. But again, after that, no, it needs to change. So I think that's a clever way of keeping the men's tag team titles alive. So after this, we had tag team action. We had Lucha House Party versus the Forgotten Sons from NXT, which I don't really know a lot about. However, they reminded me a bit of Sanity when they made their debut. And we all know how that their run went in the main roster. So I'm hoping they obviously have a little bit more of a success. Their style, it was very, very like aggressive. It was extremely powerful. It was a very fluid matchup with the high-flying moments from the Luchas and then the power and the roughness from the Forgotten Sons. It wasn't a quick squash match either, which was good because it added a little bit more to what normal sort of debuts and normal squash matches are, because normally the debuts where the superstars simply get the win in the quickest time going is pretty much what basically normally happens. But this time it was different. It was nice to get the full exposure of the debutants, and they did take a little bit more of an onslaught than what was needed. I think especially when I'm assuming they will push this tag team, but that's just the way it went. I don't think they wanted to completely overrun the Lucha House Party. I think WWE still use Lucha House Party in good ways, so they can't obviously come in as debutants and absolutely batter them. So they needed some sort of back and forth, and it worked. I loved their finisher, which I hadn't seen before, and I'm excited to see how they fare in the main roster. One thing I'd put my money on is that the names like Steve Cutler and Wesley Blake will soon just be Cutler and Blake. As we know, the main roster shows seem to lose a name after a while. We've seen this so many times before, so I'm sure that's going to come. That's just a dot on the cards. Next up, it's the women. So Sasha Banks and Bayley enter the arena. They talk about Paige trying to ruin their friendship and WrestleMania by announcing the Fatal 5-Way match like a few weeks ago. It was a very tense promo, which it felt at any point like Sasha is going to turn and basically attack Bayley. So Tamina interrupted with Bayley and Sasha, and the two best friends. They did quite a humorous like hold me back type thing, where obviously each one was getting a little bit louder each time the other one was holding her back, and then they'd stop holding her back and they turn around and go, hold me back again. I just thought it was quite funny because it was just so true at how some people get all like confident when behind someone, and then when they are face to face they become a coward. We've all seen this happen in real life. So Bayley then says to Tamina she can have a match for the title if she can beat Sasha. Now Sasha clearly isn't very happy, and again it was just a very, very clever way of building this inevitable break of friendship. I think it's coming to the boil very nicely, and I'm very excited to see how it plays out. I think normally I'd be getting a little bit bored because I'd be like, this just needs to turn now. They just need to attack each other. They just need to have it out. But they're actually building it very slowly. It's quite nice about how they're adding other people into it. So it's not just Sasha and Bayley against each other. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the Tamina match. I'm sure Tamina's going to win somehow. Maybe even Bayley stitches Sasha up a little bit. But whatever way, I think Tamina's right when she told Sasha that Bayley had screwed her, or whatever the wording that she used. So next up was a return of Sheamus. Sheamus had a squash match against Carl Bloom, which is a star that actually looked the part for once. I mean, normally these squash matches, they don't really look like they should even be in the ring. They're quite small framed, they've a bit of flab, like they don't really look like what we'd interpret as WWE stars. But anyway, in this match, this wasn't the case. So, however, what was the same was Sheamus did just beat up his opponent. It ended very swiftly with a big bro kick for the pinfall. It was nice to see him back in the ring. It was very quick. He looked strong, but he's always going to look strong in this type of squash match. He looked aggressive. it was just nice to see him back in the ring. And since he has no part to play in the Elimination Chamber, which I was hoping for, he's definitely got to get some relevancy back and a decent storyline feud for Money in the Bank. I still consider his cash-in at Survivor Series in 2015 as one of the best, just because of how it happened, the fact that Roman Reigns had finally won, and then all of a sudden Triple H and Sheamus sort of ruined the party. And then obviously Sheamus and Roman Reigns had that little thing, and basically a rip-off of Austin 316. But I think Sheamus going into Money in the Bank for me is a definite, and I also think, as we saw in the little chapter one about Jeff Hardy's career, I'm sure he's going to feature too. And there's big, big rumours about a big push for Jeff Hardy because of Vince wants to show his appreciation for staying clean and his dedication with the company, and wants him to basically realise why it's right to re-sign with WWE. So that's what I'm hearing behind the scenes. These two will definitely freshen up the competition nicely, and also with a potential Mustafa Ali return. Because if that hacker vignette rumours are true, that is Mustafa Ali, I'm sure that is. I'm sure we can all put money on it that it is going to be Mustafa Ali. But that should be a return that probably will happen soon. It just adds a much needed mix to the SmackDown roster. And it should be quite interesting to see how them superstars mix in with the current crop of stars that are obviously in current content. The main event of the night was Strowman versus Shinsuke, who is accompanied by Cesaro. So the match, it was absolute dominance from Strowman, which was nice to see. It was nice to see him again back at what he's best at after that short Goldberg Mania match. But I don't blame Braun for that. It was basically Goldberg can't hack it anymore. He can't have long matches, which we've seen for, well, basically every return since he's even come back. And I mean, even in the past when he was a massive star, they were quick matches. He's never been one to have a long, grueling match. But I thought Braun was back to his best in this match, looking strong and showing his quickness. The power from Braun is incredible, and this is where he should be booked all the time. I don't necessarily enjoy him too much as a babyface. I think a heel turn would be beneficial, considering his destruction, that sort of side of things. But as he's improving his mic work, I'd probably leave him where he is for the time being, especially as he's just won the championship, and then think about turning him in the future. I think that's probably where they're going to go with it anyway. It's just what happens with stars. I would prefer if he lost that husky voice he puts on when in the ring, because outside like of WWE, when I've seen him interviewing, especially previously in Strongman, his interviews weren't like that. So obviously if that is his own voice, then I completely apologise and I've got it wrong. But it does seem a little bit forced, and I don't necessarily think you need to put on a voice. A WWE superstar should be you with the volume turned up, which we've seen so many superstars and old superstars basically re-emphasize this. It's basically your persona with the volume turned up, a little bit of tweaks just to make it more showman, but that's all it is. So I think that's where Braun's going now. The fact he's getting a little bit more confident, a little bit more comfortable, it's just him. But let's just get back to the normal voice. He can even phase it out slowly. You don't have to come in with a brand new voice like Kofi did with the losing the Jamaican accent. So Braun wins the match with a running power slam. The Firefly Funhouse interrupts the match after Braun's win. So Bray does a quick little recap of the Mania match with John Cena, and then addresses Braun Strowman that's standing in the ring. He congratulated him when the old Bray Wyatt's head, that is now a lamp, starts talking to Bray, and it shows clip of Braun when he was the black sheep in the Wyatt family, with Bray saying he turned his back on his creator. And all things like that. He asks for an apology, but Braun says he doesn't want to play any of these games. Bray wants his title back. He goes into this mysterious persona, saying since he brought him into this world, he's going to take him out. This was another great segment from the Funhouse, the Firefly Funhouse that Bray has quite beautifully created, where it links history with the present, and it explains the storyline. So straight away, we've got a new feud, but you understand where it is. You understand that Bray wants his title back because Bray was the champion. Goldberg took it. Braun's beat Goldberg. But you understand also, apart from that, because they can be a little bit of a shallow feud for me if you just want the title. Now, obviously, everyone wants to be the top man. Everyone wants a Universal title. Everyone wants a WWE title or heavyweight title, whatever it would be called at the time. But having that history and showing that straight away, we already know that there is that little bit of extra fire to this feud. I just think it's a very, very clever way of bringing that out. But this didn't end here. Just as Bray was doing his usual like happy wave to the end of the Firefly Funhouse, Braun stops him and says whenever Bray wants, he's ready to let him in. And then does his own like happy goodbye type thing. Now, this just adds even more fuel to the fire, because before it's even begun, we've seen the history and we've seen how Braun reacts to Bray Wyatt's sort of introduction of the mind games that he uses. I just think the mind games that will be used is going to be incredible for this one. I think Bray vs Braun is something that has been in the pipeline ever since the Wyatt family ended. And with these current characters, I'm sure it won't disappoint. And the build-up will be absolutely must-see, considering the psychological funhouse segment and Braun not being the slightest bit scared. So there's questions to be answered. Like, will Bray get into the head of Strowman, which we haven't seen anyone be able to do before? Will Braun be able to show weakness in Bray, considering their past? Does Braun, like, know something about Bray Wyatt that we don't? Because obviously they were in the Wyatt family together. It'll be interesting to see how this one continues. And I'm definitely excited for it, to see how each week. I think Braun's definitely going to be a champion that's going to be there each week and potentially defend his title most weeks. And then maybe Bray Wyatt interrupts with Firefly Funhouse segments each time. But it's definitely a clever, clever way of starting this feud. So we've got confirmed matches for next week. We've got that triple threat tag team match for the titles. So that's Big E versus The Miz versus Jey Uso. We've got Tamina versus Sasha Banks. And obviously if Tamina wins, then she gets a shot at Bayley's title. We've got a Money in the Bank qualifying match for the men's in Daniel Bryan versus Cesaro. We've got a qualifying match for Money in the Bank for the women, which is Naomi versus Dana Brooke. And we've also got a little segment where Sonya Deville attempts to clear the air with Mandy Rose, which will add a different look to the storyline, as it's mainly been about the men. That the men have mainly been at the forefront of this in Otis and Dolph Ziggler. So seeing how Sonya and Mandy react to each other after all of it's come out and after the Mania situation, it'll be interesting. Also, in 2 weeks, they've announced that Triple H 25th anniversary sort of like video is going to be on SmackDown. See, I don't actually know much about it. This was the first time I'd even seen it, so I've read a little bit about it, but so far as I know, it is just basically sort of a celebration of his career. I'm sure that that's all it's going to be. However, I don't know how long each part is going to be. I'm assuming it's not the whole of SmackDown episodes. And it will simply be used as a gap filler that we've seen with some of the old matches like John Cena and Bray Wyatt at the WrestleMania 30. And we've also seen Roman Reigns versus Triple H. So I think a gap filler, I'm hoping, because of the filming difficulties, that's all it'll be. But I'll find out for you and for next week's episode, and obviously we'll see in the future. Obviously, there have been filming difficulties due to lockdown and due to the coronavirus. I think the original plan was going to be that they were going to film 5 weeks' worth of Raw, NXT and SmackDown. However, I think Vince has put a stop on that as he wants to bring live content, because I think pre-recordings breaches some sort of contract. I don't know if it breaches a contract or just the fact that the TV rights deals and the TV broadcasters won't be happy with pre-recordings because it's meant to be a live show. So I don't know if that's had something to play with it, but I've definitely been hearing that Vince wants to keep it live and he's going to do it in whatever location he can to keep it live. Obviously, we've seen in the UFC as well that it's proven a hell of a lot harder than it sounds, like than what they're making it sound like, to keep sort of these events live. So we'll have to see what Vince comes up with, but I'm sure it'll be exciting. I'm sure there'll be new content each week, and that's all we want. So once again, thank you for listening. reach out on my Twitter, as a lot of you do. Ask me any questions in my DMs and I'll be grateful of any interaction. So that's at Aid Wrestle, that's AID Wrestle. Any wrestling chat, any debates, any news that you want me to research, or any news that you just want help with on where to find it, or any questions that obviously I can help with, get in touch. But again, thank you for listening. Stay safe, and I'll see you next week. You think you know me?